Today is July 24th, 2026. This is your geopolitics briefing for Macro Observer. In the next 8 to 10 minutes, we'll cover the U.S. military's systematic destruction of Iran's sanctions evasion infrastructure at Chabahar Port and along the Tehran-Mashhad rail corridor. The ballooning war costs now approaching $70 billion in supplemental requests, Iranian drone strikes spreading into Kuwait, and a parallel story out of Ukraine, where CSIS analysts describe a strike campaign against Russian infrastructure that's achieved what they call near-total orchestration. Let's start with the number that frames everything else, 300. That's the count of confirmed, destroyed Iranian assets U.S. forces have racked up across sites like Jask, Bandar Abbas, Kish Island, Keshem, and Abu Musa. But the headline isn't the tally. It's the target selection. According to Hardware Zone's operational analysis, U.S. forces have moved past proportional retaliation and into something more deliberate, dismantling the actual architecture Iran built to survive sanctions. F-15E Strike Eagles reportedly took out the control tower at Chabahar, which matters enormously because Chabahar isn't just any port, it's Iran's only deepwater access to the Indian Ocean. Losing that control tower forced a suspension of connected rail service. In the same window, two railway bridges on the Tehran-Mashhad corridor were destroyed. That corridor is the overland link connecting Iran to Turkmenistan, China, and Russia. And Iran's own Revolutionary Guard confirmed the loss. The strategic calculus here is straightforward. Maritime-focused sanctions enforcement historically couldn't touch that overland channel. Now it's gone too, which directly constrains the flow of Russian equipment and Chinese goods into Tehran. This all escalated after the IRGC struck the Cyprus-flagged container ship GFS Galaxy and declared the Strait of Hormuz closed. CENTCOM's response was to ramp up strike tempo fast from roughly 80 targets on night 1 to 90, then to 140. Iran tried a legal maneuver alongside the military one. Its parliament speaker publicly cited the Islamabad Memorandum of Understanding as evidence that closing the strait was within bounds, converting ambiguous, best efforts language into a claim of unilateral toll authority. CENTCOM's rebuttal was a single sentence rejecting that theory outright and then backed it with force. Building on that, the human and financial costs are becoming impossible to ignore. Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth told the Senate the conflict's direct cost has already reached $37.5 billion, with an additional $70 billion in emergency funding now requested. Senator Jack Reed called the overruns, gross negligence, and anti-war protesters have disrupted hearings, suggesting that funding approval is going to require real partisan negotiation, not a rubber stamp. On the casualty side, Army Sergeant Angel Ramparad has been confirmed as a third service member killed in the earlier Jordan base attack, bringing reported U.S. casualties to 18 killed and nearly 100 wounded. More importantly, the war is no longer contained to a bilateral exchange. Iranian drone strikes have expanded into Kuwait after 11 consecutive nights of U.S. airstrikes on Iranian territory. Bahrain, Qatar, and Kuwait have all sustained residential strike damage. Bahrain's defense forces explicitly condemned civilian targeting. The strategic calculus here shifts again. This is no longer just about degrading Iran's capability. It's about whether Gulf states start pursuing expanded U.S. security guarantees or begin building independent deterrent postures of their own. That's a question that could reshape the regional order well after this conflict ends. Historically, this sequencing, suppression first, saturation second, mirrors Operation Desert Storm doctrine. And Iran's maritime coercion, met by systematic strikes on coastal infrastructure, echoes the tanker war of the 1980s, when Operation Praying Mantis in 1988 saw U.S. forces directly engage Iranian naval assets after mining operations threatened Gulf shipping. The pattern repeats because the geography hasn't changed. The Gulf remains a choke point, and control of it remains existential for Tehran's economy. Now, zoom out to energy markets, because this is where the Iran conflict stops being a regional story and becomes a global one. According to energy researcher Chris Martinson, speaking on Tucker Carlson's broadcast, the combined effect of the Iran war and continued Ukrainian strikes on Russian energy infrastructure has produced a supply shock of roughly 12 million barrels per day, measured against pre-war global consumption of approximately 86 million barrels per day. The shifting geography of power here shows up directly in price. Brent crude spiked to roughly $118 per barrel, up from about $70 to $72 before the war began. Effective consumption is being pushed back toward 2011 levels. The U.S. has released approximately 172 million barrels from the Strategic Petroleum Reserve, part of a coordinated G7 and IEA release that Martinson pegs at roughly 400 million barrels total. Building on that, he cites New York Harbor diesel at an all-time high and New England heating oil up 84% year over year, with gasoline prices forecast to keep climbing. The strategic calculus here is that this isn't a temporary spike. It's a structural shock layered on top of an already tight market, and it's arriving right as winter heating demand planning begins in earnest. Which brings us to the second theater worth watching closely, Ukraine. CSIS analysts Seth Jones and Mick Ryan describe Kyiv's parallel campaign, over 20,000 strikes against Russian infrastructure, as achieving what they call near-total orchestration across military and diplomatic domains. That phrase matters. It suggests Ukraine has synchronized its strike campaign with diplomatic signaling in a way that maximizes pressure on Moscow without triggering the kind of uncontrolled escalation ladder we're now watching unfold in the Gulf. More importantly, the fact that two separate Western-aligned strike doctrines, one in the Gulf, one against Russia, are converging simultaneously suggests a broader shift in how Washington and its partners are willing to use infrastructure denial as a primary tool of coercion rather than a secondary one. So where does this leave us? The strategic calculus for Iran is bleak. Its sanctions evasion architecture, built over decades to route around maritime enforcement, has been dismantled in a matter of weeks. Its legal justification for closing Hormuz has been rejected and answered with force. And its response, pushing drone strikes into Kuwait, risks converting a bilateral war into a multi-state Gulf crisis at exactly the moment its economy can least absorb sustained conflict. The specific regional signal to monitor in the next 48 hours is whether Iranian drone activity extends beyond Kuwait into Qatari or Bahraini airspace again. A second strike on either country, following the residential damage already reported, would likely trigger a formal response invoking collective Gulf Cooperation Council defense arrangements, a threshold that, if crossed, moves this conflict from a U.S.-Iran confrontation into a genuinely multilateral Gulf War footing. Stay vigilant. Until tomorrow. That's your core brief for today. Thanks for listening. We'll be back tomorrow with more.